The date is August 18th, 1995, and we're watching Mortal Kombat!
Yeah.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One.
Welcome to I Used to Like This One, the show where we take a look back at movies we remember fondly from our childhood and attempt to look past the nostalgia to see if they still hold up. I am your host, Sean Wells, and with me is my co-host,
Colin Stewart.
And also today, we have a very special guest with us to discuss Mortal Kombat. I would like to introduce everyone to our guest, David Sun. David,
hey.
Hello, how are you today?
I'm doing really well, thanks guys for
Excellent.
Having me.
Yes, well, we're happy to have you because you've actually got a very unique connection to Mortal Kombat. Yeah, we have an expert on our
yes,
hands.
So...
Give us your rundown, David. Why do we have you here?
Yeah, so I've been playing Mortal Kombat since I was 8 years old, and I've played every single one of them as they have come out and have pretty much mastered them, as best as you can master like a fighting game, right? And well, for Mortal Kombat X, I was ranked third in the world. Yeah, on all the leaderboards on PS4 and Xbox One.
So. Oh, amazing.
Like, what number does the leaderboard max out at?
As far as...
Like, what was number one as far as, like, score or
oh,
what factors into the ranking?
It's your win-loss ratio and how many wins you've had.
Okay, remember yours?
I played something like 10,000 rounds.
Oh,
10, and, like, probably had an 80% win rate. So it's pretty embarrassing.
Outstanding. Right on.
Who's your guy?
Yeah, who's your go-to guy?
Okay, so I have two. I don't play guys. I only play female characters.
Oh, wow.
So Kitana is my main.
Okay.
She was OP in MKX. And I really liked Melina as well. So
and with the video games themselves, do you have a favorite one or do they just kind of have their own charm depending on which you know what you're looking for?
Yeah, they changed the mechanics of the since the 3D era kind of ended. They rebooted the entire series recently with Mortal Kombat, and then ever since then they've kind of changed the mechanics of the game each time, so you're kind of learning a whole new system.
Oh wow.
And fighting games have become so much more sophisticated in that you're really kind of paying attention to frame data. Right, so each move has certain like whiff frames and then punish frames, so it becomes almost mathematical.
Yeah. It all makes sense.
Yeah,
I've tried playing. I haven't played Mortal Kombat in a while, but I've played like Injustice, which is made by like the same company.
Yeah,
yeah.
And I've tried playing online, and I feel like I'm in the Matrix. Like they move way faster than I can even think.
Okay, well, so this week we're looking back at August 1995 when the movies in theaters were Waterworld, Virtuosity, Kid in King Arthur's Court, which we mentioned during the Wizard episode, Dangerous Minds, and of course our movie for today, Mortal Kombat, which earned $122.1 million on a $20 million budget.
I thought it was crazy that that this movie spent 3 weeks as the number one film in the U.S.
Number one.
I mean, watching it now is kind of like, it's a little bit dated, and I wouldn't have thought back in the day that it would have been so hype.
Yeah.
But man, people must have loved it.
Well, when you look at what it's up against, I mean, there's not really anything that's this much of a popcorn-type movie.
Having said that, I think as far as like video game movies goes, it holds up a lot better than
a lot of most video game movies. Yeah.
Okay.
As obviously, a warning for anybody who hasn't seen this movie, it came out in 1995, so I mean, you should have seen it by now.
Yeah.
It's a great movie, you should have seen it by now. If you haven't seen it, you don't want it to be spoiled, go watch it, come back, and listen to what we have to say.
Right on. So, the tagline that appears on the poster for this movie is, choose your destiny. That's it. Ends in an ellipsis, choose your destiny, ... I kind of would have liked, finish him. I think that would have been a great tagline. But that's an absolutely terrible description of what this movie is. So, we go to Colin for our 60-second synopsis.
Now's my time to shine. Mortal Kombat follows Liu Kang, Sonya Blade, and Johnny Cage, three warriors who, under the guidance of the Thunder God Raiden, have been chosen to defend Earthrealm from the evil sorcerer Shang Tsung and the hordes of Outworld as they attempt to win their 10th straight Mortal Kombat tournament and invade the Earth.
Right on. Yeah, so I know for me, this is one that once I turned it on, I started thinking, have I actually seen this movie? Right, like, because I know that there were specific scenes that I vividly remember, like Scorpion in the forest. I vividly remember that that fight scene, but the whole storyline, I was trying to remember whether I had actually seen the movie in its entirety. But now for you, David, you're a big Mortal Kombat player.
Yeah.
What's your movie history with Mortal Kombat?
Well, I've watched them hundreds and hundreds of times. Annihilation, the second one, is just on another level of camp craziness. But I actually really loved the first Mortal Kombat movie.
I don't think I've ever actually seen Annihilation. That's one that, like, this is one that I'm questioning whether I saw it. But yeah, Annihilation, I don't know if I've ever seen it at all. Colin?
I mean, truth be told, in my memory, I liked Annihilation more, but I still obviously love Mortal Kombat. Yeah, I've watched this movie a ton of times. It's one of the first movies that we've done this podcast where I've actually seen it before. So I was excited that we were doing it.
he's usually the one in the podcast that hasn't even heard of some of the movies yet. So it's great.
Yeah, going back and watching it, I kind of agree with you. Like, I remember a lot of the scenes. I didn't really remember the story, but it's kind of that thing we were talking about in other movies. When you're a kid, you just remember all the fun stuff.
Yeah.
You don't remember all the filler in between.
Yeah, no. And the movie opens so strangely with, it kind of introduces each character in their own individual scenario. And I just remember thinking, when I rewatched it recently, I was like, what? These people don't even know what they're getting into. They're just living their daily lives.
Well, on that note, let's jump into Mortal Kombat. It's directed by Paul W.S. Anderson, who definitely has a specific genre of movies that he likes doing. He's the director of Alien vs. Predator, Pompeii, four of the Resident Evil movies, but he wrote all six.
Oh, I didn't realize.
It's produced by Robert Engelman, who did Blade, Mystery Men, The Mask, and From Justin to Kelly, and written by, okay, this is where it gets a little confusing. We have Ed Boon and John Tobias, who both get video game credit.
Yeah, they're the creators of Mortal Kombat.
They're the create, but they're also given a writing credit on the movie, but it doesn't actually say, like, written by or story by. They're just given the video game credit. So, I don't know exactly what that means in context of writing the movie.
I think the movie is based on the video game so closely.
Okay.
That they probably just decided
it's just enough that they should get the credit. Yeah, I was thinking maybe it was, like, when Steven Spielberg got the story by credit in Goonies. You know,
it'd be similar to that, I think.
Yeah. When you look at their IMDb, their credit history, they're just pretty much everything Mortal Kombat. Nearly all of their credits have to do with either the movies or the video games. And Ed Boon, in fact, is also the voice of Scorpion in both this and the games.
Yes.
Nice. So, and our third credited writer is Kevin Droney, whose entire IMDb, this is my favorite, his profile bio on IMDb is born 1948.
That's it.
That's his entire IMDb profile. He has credits like Wing Commander, the Highlander TV series. So, you know, we're not off to the greatest start here. But we open on the wild techno Mortal Kombat theme, where they are screaming the name of the movie at you. You know, and we're into it.
Still like one of the best theme songs.
It is
iconic. It's so recognizable as soon as you hear it.
And I know this is one that even when you're walking through a busy arcade in the 90s, this is one that you can hear in your peripheral the whole time. You can kind of hear
the thumping
and the Mortal Kombat.
That song was a mainstay of my gym playlist for the longest time.
Yeah.
Admitted, it still is. we then proceed to the top of a temple to watch a fight between Shang Tsung, played by, I'm going to butcher this, Kari Hiroyuko. No, sorry. Kerry Hiroyuki Tagawa. He was in Tekken, another video game movie, Planet of the Apes, the shitty Tim Burton, Mark Wahlberg one, and Hachi, A Dog's Tale, which was a Richard Gere movie about the dog that kept going back in Shibuya Crossing in Tokyo to wait for his owner. I actually visited the statue of Hachi when I was in Tokyo a couple years ago.
Just real quickly, so something really interesting about Kerry Tagawa, he became so iconically recognized as Shang Tsung that in Mortal Kombat 11, they actually brought him back and 3D rendered him as the character.
Oh, really? Okay. So yeah, the fight is happening between him and Chan, who is played by Stephen Ho. He's mostly a stunt guy. He's got 60 stunt credits versus his 25 acting credits. Where Shang Tsung is victorious and murders Chan. And then Shang Tsung says directly to the camera, "Your brother's soul is mine, yours will be next." And we find out that the whole opening scene was just a nightmare of Liu Kang's. Liu Kang played by Robin Shu. He was in Mortal Kombat, and then he reprised his role in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. And in between, he was in Beverly Hills Ninja. I remember him in Beverly Hills Ninja. And interestingly, I was fascinated to find out that he was in Street Fighter: The Legend of Chun-Li as well. I mean, isn't this like going from Star Wars to Star Trek? Isn't jumping to a Street Fighter movie just sacrilegious in the Mortal Kombat
him
community?
In that movie.
I don't know. I'd have to say that I don't think I've seen that either.
It's funny because Jean-Claude Van Damme was actually in the running to play Johnny Cage.
Oh, really?
But he did not. He backed out of the role to play Guile in Street Fighter, so he made his choice.
Yeah, and Street Fighter is definitely one of the ones that is more revered to be worse. Yeah. So Liu Kang wakes up from his nightmare, and we see that he has received a Western Union telegram informing him of his brother's death. And on that note, it's time for a segment we like to call Sponsorship Corner. Now, as always, one of my favorite things about some of these old movies is the blatant product placement. So this week, Mortal Kombat is brought to you by Western Union. And that's it.
I was shocked that you even had one. I didn't think you were going to find
a very
anything.
Disappointing sponsorship corner. I guess an argument could be made that Mortal Kombat is also brought to you by Midway Games. Who is bankrupt now. But, you know, for actual placement in the movie, yep, Western Union was the only one that I noticed. And this has been Sponsorship Corner. So we jump now scenes to watch Sonya, played by Bridget Wilson Sampras, who was in Last Action Hero, but I remember her most as Veronica Vaughn. I want to touch the hiney in Billy Madison.
I knew I recognized her face.
Did she play the daughter in the Last Action Hero?
I don't know.
Oh, you just made that connection for me now.
Last Action Hero is one that's on our list, but further down the list. Okay. So I know Last Action Hero is one that I have in the back of my mind because I know I haven't watched it in a long time. But yeah, we've got Sonya and Jax. Jax is played by Gregory McKinney, who is in Eraser, Beverly Hills Cop 3, Money Train. And they are looking for Kano, who is played by Trevor Goddard. He was in 42 episodes of JAG, Pirates of the Caribbean, nothing since 2010. I've noticed that with a lot of the guys that I've researched is somewhere around 2009, 2010, that's when most of them stopped acting. Yeah. So maybe that's because most of them are martial artists. Maybe that's where their knees started giving out. They didn't have anything else to offer. But they're chasing Kano into a nightclub in Hong Kong. And we find out that Kano has been hired by Shang Tsung as bait to lure Sonya to the tournament. And we get to touch on what David said near the beginning is that, okay, so Kano is one of these guys that knows what the tournament is all about. But Sonya just kind of gets suckered into appearing in the tournament.
It's just so bizarre to me. How did they decide that this random FBI agent was going to fight for the world
Yeah.
You know?
Well, exactly.
Well, there's... Yeah. When I watched it the second time, I was trying to piece together what Shang Tsung's plan is for Sonya. Because he seems to have a real deep interest in right. her. But it never really it never really gets explained what it was.
Oh, absolutely. We'll get yeah. to the end. We'll talk about it.
Okay. So Sonya and Jax are pursuing Kano through the dance club where no one is reacting to gunfire.
Yeah.
And they just keep on dancing, and I'm amazed that no bystanders get hit.
She has way too big of a gun for such a close quarters.
I love that there's one scene where she shoots that window out and the yeah. entire thing just shatters into a billion pieces onto the dancers.
Yeah. But they just keep dancing. Yeah. Yeah. Oh, and my very next note, why does Shang Tsung want Sonya so badly? Right on. So we've gotten that introduction scene of those people, and then now we get to meet Johnny Cage, played by Lyndon Ashby. He was in 29 episodes of Days of Our Lives, and he's kind of the king of sequels, I noticed. He was in Resident Evil Extinction. He was in Sniper 2, which I remember was a direct-to-video. He was in Anaconda's Trail of Blood, oh. which I remember was direct-to-video. He was in Wild Things 2, which I remember he was in direct-to-video. His biggest role seems to be currently, he's the sheriff in 88 episodes of Teen Wolf. But Johnny Cage is busy filming a movie with his line, "Let's dance." And Cage has the moment where he fights everybody, and the last stuntman in the scene doesn't fall down, and he says, "This is where you fall down," and he's furious because everyone around him is incompetent, and so they yell cut. He takes a break, and we find out that Johnny Cage is being called a poser in the tabloids, and he has a conversation with Mr. Boyd, played by Peter Jason, who is arguably the most renowned actor in this film. He has 264 credits. Mm-hmm. So I just didn't even bother pointing out any of them, but psych. We find out Mr. Boyd is not actually Mr. Boyd. He's actually Shang Tsung in disguise, luring Johnny Cage into the tournament by playing to his ego. What a reveal, yeah. You know?
I also just wanted to jump in. It's no coincidence that the director of that film looks like Steven Spielberg. He was actually tabbed to have a cameo, but things fell through.
Spielberg was supposed to have a cameo?
Yeah, and that like the fact that he was supposed to have a cameo is also bizarre because I don't understand why Steven Spielberg would be in what connection he yeah. has to Mortal Kombat.
But even just, like, tiers of, you know, yeah. like, in the prestige, like, Spielberg, Mortal Kombat.
Yeah, that doesn't make much sense to me either. So now we've got Liu Kang travels to the temple that he dreamt about and says that he wants to represent the Order of Light at the tournament to get revenge on the man who killed his brother. I have to admit, like, the whole backstory with the Order of Light and Raiden, like, was it just, am I just an idiot? Like, it seemed complicated, or was it just convoluted, or...
You know, Mortal Kombat has a really yeah. deep lore, yeah. and the games kind of carry it all the way through, and they still refer to those original concepts, even to this day.
So, yeah. like, I mean, I played Mortal Kombat back on my Nintendo, or my Sega, or, you know, back in the day. You know, I played some arcade. I'm not ranked number 3 in the world or anything, but I do know Mortal Kombat. I just don't know whether maybe I skipped past all the storyline. Like, should I have paid more attention in the video games to the backstory so that I would have understood this movie a little bit more?
Yeah. Yeah, so yeah. they're fleshed out in the character endings, but back then they were just kind of, you know, text. So you have to kind of read about it, and then they would make the connections. It kind of got more fleshed out by, I think, Mortal Kombat 3, the in the video game, was when they started, like, really nailing down what the lore was about.
Okay.
Yeah. I found it comes into play a lot, especially with the Scorpion Sub-Zero stuff.
Yeah.
Because that story is so deep and so, like...
Yeah.
Huge.
Yeah.
So, Liu Kang wants to represent the Order of the Light at the tournament to get revenge on the man who killed his brother. This is the point where we meet Lord Raiden, played by Christopher Lambert. If you don't know who he is, he's the Highlander. And a whole bunch of French movies. Like half of his IMDb, he is just foreign language films. And he demands that Liu Kang proves his worth to him. And in a total rebel move, Liu Kang decides to go with or without their consent. In the video game, is Lord Raiden white? Like, is this somewhere where Hollywood is whitewashing it's the like characters a little bit?
It depends on the game, and even sometimes, like, in the Mortal Kombat Conquest TV show, he's more Asian.
Yeah, and they change character models from game to game, completely different races each time, yeah. too. So
oh, so Lord Raiden is kind of like a Green Lantern. It can just be anybody from any world.
Pretty much, yeah.
It may not ever be actually the same person, who knows. So now we get to the boat in Hong Kong Harbor. That'll take everyone to the tournament now that we've had a chance to kind of meet everybody. And Johnny Cage just assumes that Liu Kang is a porter. I was kind of surprised that there is a very big lack of Chinese people on the dock for Hong Kong Harbor. Yeah. So, you know, like, effectively, Liu Kang is kind of the first Asian guy that walks by. So is that why Johnny Cage assumes that that he's a porter? Like, I just don't understand why... Out of everyone that's around, he assumes that this is the guy that's going to take his luggage up
on
the boat.
And they're not even close to the boat at that point.
Yeah.
Like, you can see the boat in the distance.
Yeah, and Liu Kang is walking by in a leather jacket. Yeah. Like, he's not in a uniform. He's not... Like, if he was in some sort of, you know, Hong Kong military uniform or something like that, I could understand him thinking.
Yeah.
But... Yeah, so we find out that Johnny Cage is just a little bit racist, and you know, and his hijinks with his luggage begins. That'll come back. But the ship comes in, the spooky-ass, like, Viking-looking ship with the dragon on the front. And this is where Kano lets himself be seen so that Sonya pursues him onto the boat. And then, in the same way that Johnny Cage... thought that Liu Kang was an employee of the harbor, we get on the ship and Sonya starts overreacting with Johnny Cage because obviously he must know where Kano is. Like, she, out of all the people that are on the deck of the ship, she grabs Johnny Cage and says, "Where's Kano? Where's Kano?" And he's like, "What the fuck?
Yeah.
Let go of me. Who?" Right? So we have this chase that goes through the boat. Sonya ends up cornering Shang Tsung, and the boys come to the rescue because, God forbid, we've got a strong female character you're actually portraying her on film. You know, and I agree with you. Like, you know, when it came to playing Street Fighter, you know, someone like Sonya Blade was actually a good player.
Mortal Kombat.
Or, sorry, Street Fighter. Sorry, I was thinking Chun-Li. I used to use Chun-Li, but yeah, in Mortal Kombat, Sonya was someone that I would use. Like, the female characters are strong in the game, but man, is she's just a fucking damsel in distress.
Yeah. Yeah.
At one point, she's, like, literally a damsel in distress. I don't understand why we need the boys coming to the rescue, but I guess we need to see this trinity of heroes that are going to save the entire realm of reality and all that sort of thing. But this is where we get to meet Scorpion. I'm excited to say this name, played by Chris Casamassa. He's a ninth degree black belt. He's got 18 acting and 7 stunt credits. Sub-Zero, played by Francois Petit. He's got 4 credits to his name. So, and they have a fight in the bowels of the ship. And I must say that the Scorpion effects, not too bad.
Yeah, for 1995.
For 1995, the Scorpion effects are not too bad. But then Raiden shows up with his lightning powers, and his effects are not too good.
I think, like, it's just clip art. With, like, a clip art of light being dragged across the frame.
Yeah, like, they worked really hard on the Scorpion effects. But, yeah, the lightning for Raiden is just absolutely terrible. But, yeah, Shang Tsung, Scorpion, and Sub-Zero, because... they all leave because Raiden reminds Shang Tsung that attacking them now is against the rules. So, you know, everyone just... gives up on their pursuit. Sonya, who is, like, absolutely seen red for Kano. She wants Kano dead. She's just like, meh, whatever.
Well, that's the same with Liu Kang. Like, he's not... Shang Tsung is right in front of him, and he's just, like, so reserved.
Yeah, they're there for a very specific reason, right, each of them. But then you have to imagine what happens between that and when they arrive at the island. They're all just chilling on this boat, you know?
We're nowhere cool, to
we'll
hide.
Wait. Yeah. We'll wait.
Yeah. And it's like Liu Kang. Liu Kang is there knowing that he's going to the tournament, but Sonya Sonya, she, what does she care? She doesn't know why she's there.
Even know about the tournament at this point.
Yeah, she's just on this weird messed up ship all of a sudden, and it's like, well, I guess I'm going wherever it's going now.
Yeah.
but she just gives up her pursuit, so whatever. So we get some exposition at this point from Raiden. Talking about the many realms and the history of Mortal Kombat, and then we get him saying, it has begun when the storm clouds move in, and then Raiden looks at the sky as well and screams, it has begun, and we see skulls flying through the sky and all that sort of stuff.
Shang Tsung.
Yeah. Shang Tsung, yeah. And then we, what did I say?
Raiden.
Raiden says it, and Shang Tsung. Yeah, see, too many people all mixed up. See, that's why we need a Mortal Kombat expert on this episode. And then we end up landing on the mysterious island where Sonya's radio doesn't work and the compass is going nuts. I guess they're in the middle of the Bermuda Triangle. And we get more Johnny Cage hijinks with his luggage as he tries to take everything off the ship or off the boat and ends up falling into the water with all his luggage. And then I had a note here where they're walking down the beach and I say, is Sonya literally the only woman? And then, oh wait, there's another one. And we get to meet Princess Kitana. And Princess Kitana is played by Talisa Soto. And she's the subject of this week's Bit Player Spotlight. So Miriam Talisa Soto was born March 27, 1967 in Brooklyn, New York. The youngest of four siblings, she was actually raised in Northampton, Massachusetts. At age 15, she signed with Plick Model Management and began modeling during summer vacations and appeared on covers of Vogue, Elle, Mademoiselle, Glamour, and Self magazines, and appeared in many others, including the 1995 Sports Illustrated Swimsuit issue, the 1990 100 Most Beautiful People issue of People. Wow, I should have revised that sentence before I wrote it down. And a 2002 Maxim, where she was ranked number 58 in that year's Hot 100 Women. She was featured in advertising campaigns for Calvin Klein, Clarus, Revlon, Versace, and others. She had appeared in a Madonna music video, Each Time You Break My Heart. I don't even know what that Madonna song is. But in 1988, she made her feature film debut in the comedy Spike of Bensonhurst, which is an Ernest Borgnine comedy I've never heard of. Mm. And also that year was cast as a Bond girl in the Timothy Dalton License to Kill and as Maria Rivero in Mambo Kings. She has appeared in other films such as Mortal Kombat Annihilation, where she reprises her role of Kitana, Don Juan DeMarco, Ballistic X vs. Sever, and Spy Hard, where she is inexplicably credited as Desiree Moore. I'm not sure why for this one movie she goes as Desiree Moore. I even decided to look up to see if everyone in Spy Hard, because Spy Hard is a Leslie Nielsen spoof comedy. I looked up to see if everyone went by aliases, but no.
Just her.
Just her. She also appeared in 15 episodes of the TV show Hearts of the West. Her last screen appearance was in the 2013 movie Elysium, although her role is uncredited in that movie. Since 2002, she has been married to actor Benjamin Bratt, very soon after his much-publicized relationship with Julia Roberts, and only a couple years after her divorce to first husband, Australian actor Costas Mandalore. They have a son and daughter together. And that is Bit Player Spotlight. So, yeah, Shang Tsung says, what's up to Kitana? And brings a weird gremlin statue to life. Okay, what is this gremlin?
It's a reptile.
Okay, so that is reptile.
Like, yeah, so in the movies, reptile is this creature that when he gets thrown into disemboweled bodies, he takes it over.
Okay.
Yeah, but that's a weird scene. She's just lingering on the beach under like an umbrella or something.
Well,
like that.
She's in the cave under an umbrella. Yeah. Like, she's not even lounging on the beach under an umbrella.
That's right.
She's got a shelf in the cave that she's just hanging out in. That's the Kitana spot, I guess. So I've got a note here that says, literally one black dude, though. So we finally found another woman. But yeah, so far we've literally met one black dude. But so we've got feast time with a floor show, and we got a bunch of oily guys flipping tables to show off why you're here, I guess.
That scene always makes me laugh because someone, whoever was the event planner for this, was said to them, at some point in the evening, we're going to take all this food and just flip it off.
So, and they don't even give them a time limit. Yeah. It's never, not even like, okay, 5 minutes until you guys have to be done eating. We swear, you have to be done. We promise. You're gonna understand in a minute. But this is where we get to see what Sub-Zero can really do. I've got a note that says Sub-Zero is pretty cool, though. No pun intended. Shang Tsung is basically just proving a point by letting him freeze and shatter someone to death. This is post Terminator 2, I believe.
Yeah,
Terminator 2 was before
92.
Yeah, 92 for Terminator 2. So, you know, they've taken the Terminator 2 idea and made it with ice. So, but not a bad effect.
No, nope.
Like again, it was, yeah, again, yeah, this
ice
is
effect was awesome.
This was another one that was surprisingly good for 1995.
It does kind of always bother me though that Sub-Zero has to like hold his power for so long to build up the ice. Like, yeah.
He's forming it from the water particles in the air.
Right. So they once again, I guess they've forgotten the rules from the boat that Raiden slapped down on them, because they want to go after Shang Tsung again. So Johnny Cage is pretty much just comic relief at this point, because they see Goro, the shadow of Goro on the wall, and he says, "Sonya, you go ahead and find out what that was. Lou and I will stay right here." And again, another special effect that's not too bad. When we do meet Goro, it's actually not.
Yeah,
it's a fairly solid bad guy.
It's
like
a puppet.
Yeah, it's.
Is it a puppet?
Yeah, it's not CG. It's
okay, but is it a full size puppet?
Yeah,
puppet?
It's a full size puppet.
Wow.
Yeah. It's
okay.
Really, really cool.
So the Goro gives more exposition about Shang Tsung, so that we can learn a bit more about what he's all about. Those candle drips are on point. Like, they've got candles all around them, and man, I want to be the prop guy on that movie, melting down candles so that we've got all these glorious candle drips all over the room. But Shang Tsung comes in and he lets Goro know that. Okay, so we find out that Princess Kitana must not be allowed to join forces with Liu Kang if he is to succeed in his evil plan to take the throne from the Emperor.
This is also the part where you find out that Liu Kang is the descendant of Kung Lao, which is also one of those like important like backstory things that we don't really explain. But
and Kung Lao is not in the movie,
and
right?
He's not,
yeah,
he's not
just
in the movie.
Making sure I didn't
but
miss
it's
him.
A
like
big storyline.
Yeah.
Yeah, you're right. And they just kind of throw it out there.
Yeah,
like because Jax is one of those blink and you'll miss him type kind of characters in the beginning, and I remember Jax from the game.
Yeah.
So it's just like, okay, just making sure that I didn't miss another one.
Like, the Kung Lao thing is just one of those things they keep throwing out, but never like. They, like, throw it out like you should just know.
Yeah, it's almost like fan service, right? Yeah. They just throw out the name.
I suppose so. And so we have the line from Johnny Cage that has to be Princess Kitana. The only other chick here. I guess that does have to be Princess Kitana. So they chase after Princess Kitana, and they get separated, and the gremlin thing attacks Liu Kang. So Reptile attacks Liu Kang. And then just disappears again. Like, we've got all these setups of people that are going to have these fights, and then they just fizzle away.
Well, the tournament hasn't officially started yet.
That's
so
true.
And when the reptile fight happens, it pays off. Man.
this is a teaser.
I love that at 1.2, Johnny Cage is following Kitana, and he says, "I know exactly where I'm going. She went this way." As he's breaking through like a half dozen, all these cobwebs that have obviously not been touched for years, he's breaking through every single one of them. But she went this way. I swear, I saw her go this way. And then we get our techno Mortal Kombat fight where it's the three against many fight, and everyone just kind of dispatches of all these faceless henchmen, and we get the clap. Brilliant. Absolutely brilliant from Raiden. Now tell me what you plan to do about them. And we find out they are surrounded by so many more. And then Raiden just walks them out. Like, again, you know, you've set up this amazing, okay, what are you going to do about those guys? And then it's like, nah, just kidding.
Budget. But, yeah. It was only $20 million.
You know, so he walks them out. It's kind of anticlimactic. And then we get more exposition about Shang Tsung from Raiden. And then this is the point of the movie where it just kind of turns into series of fights.
Yeah.
This is what we came for.
This is exactly what we came for, yeah.
This is literally the portion of the movie I remember the most.
This is now the video game on screen because every fight has to happen in a different location as well. I have the note, oh, there's another black guy, and Liu Kang fights him. And we've got quite the hierography going on between this guy, because he's got the braids in his hair, and Liu Kang has this fluffy coif going on.
Was Liu Kang's hair a wig? I was trying to figure out if it was natural or if it was it hangs to the side too good.
It's too good. That if it is a wig, it's a very high quality lace front wig.
Yeah, because so. that is a fluffy do. Like that is some good moving hair.
I also found with this fight with the capoeira guy, like, they dub, like, tiger roars.
That's right.
All the time. Every time he yells or anything, it's this tiger roar behind his yell.
Oh, I didn't even notice that.
It was weird.
Damn it, am I going to have to watch this a third time? yes, and this is now where we get our first fatality of the movie. You know, the fan service. We're now like half an hour into the movie, but Shang Tsung takes his soul from him and says fatality. And yeah, so we're now going into our series of battles. Next up we have Sonya versus Kano. So Sonya is right out of the gate. She's getting her revenge match. And this is where we get our first finish him, from the movie. When she's thigh mastering his head,
yeah,
that's not her finishing move in the game.
No,
is
but
it?
It is a very iconic move that she has. And in Mortal Kombat 9, they do turn it into a finishing move where she grabs him by the legs and then she opens her legs and splits them in half.
Okay,
yeah,
okay. And I mean, this is Sonya kind of gets her ass kicked a little bit, but she is tough enough to beat Kano.
I found that fight a little bit hard to watch when he was, like, kicking her in the stomach.
Oh, yeah. That was really visceral.
Really violent.
Yeah.
But Kano's just such a badass character. It made me sad that he gets killed so early. Like, I love when he shows up, his accent and everything.
Yeah.
When he comes out and he pulls out the blade and he's like, I'm gonna cut you ear to ear.
He's so cool. Like, and that actually was, again, another character that was just so well recognized that they just permanently made Kano Australian for the rest of the game series.
Yeah.
And his metal face prosthetic was actually, like, it was pretty good makeup there. But, maybe that's why they have a lack of women in this movie, is because of that reaction that you have. Like, even in 2020, you're kind of like, it's hard to watch a woman getting beat up.
Well, the one thing I noticed comparing this movie, that's like an action fighting movie, compared to a similar movie made today, is like, looking at Sonya's fighting, I wouldn't buy her as a fighter.
No. That's right.
Whereas,
that's
like,
true.
Now it's like they would train that actor, that actress, like, tons beforehand so that she would have an actual
It was very brawling kind of like style to it. There's just no technique behind it, which is why I'm like, why did she end up in this tournament?
She's very much like a street boxer, whereas you're right,
but she's, like, also special forces. She would fight better.
Exactly. And nowadays you'd have choreography that was a lot like Black Widow or something like that. You'd be doing stuff like that.
That's a good comparison.
Yeah.
Well, we'll see what happens when the remake comes out next year.
Exactly. So we've got our first finish him, and then next we're just in a forest. And I was wondering, is this part of the tournament, or is it just a random fight? Because right. you know, it's just in the middle of a forest.
Who's,
like,
who's reffing this?
Right? Like, exactly. So we've got Scorpion versus Johnny Cage. Scorpion, you know, we get our classic "Get over here." And the CGI on the hand is not too bad. When his yeah. chain is coming out of the hand, it's not too bad. But then it gets a little wonky
once it leaves.
Yeah, once it leaves, it hits the tree right by Johnny Cage's head, and all of a sudden it's like, oh, I was giving that CGI too much credit, because coming out of his hand, it looked good. Going into the tree,
well, I thought it was yikes. Funny when it hits the tree, it like blood spatters.
Yeah,
and then he pulls it out.
Yeah, that's right.
So yeah, they're fighting, and then they get sucked into a different location, which is the weird scaffolding area with the conveniently smooth bar for aerial acrobatics.
Yeah.
You know, everything looks rusty and sharp and rough.
Definitely get tetanus doing that.
Yeah. The whole room looks like it's just one big tetanus shot requirement, but except for the one bar that he swings on to do his acrobatics.
That is fan service, though, because that is a element of the game, I think, where Scorpion has like the different realm he pulls people to, and then...
yeah. But although now that I think about it, I don't think that happened in Mortal Kombat 3, yeah. and this came out before Mortal Kombat 3, I think.
Oh,
yeah. So they pulled that element. It. Yeah.
Okay.
So they retcon for the video games later on.
I know, like when he pulls off his mask and does the flamethrower skull is. Yeah. From Mortal Kombat 1 or 2. But.
Yeah, so that was actually also kind of a cool effect, too. And then we end up getting Scorpion's death with his skull sliced in half with the shield that Johnny Cage has managed to find. It's the most gruesome death so far as well, but still not very... You know, I wonder back in 1995 how furious people were at how tame... the fatalities were for this movie that is so famous as a video game having like it was Mortal Kombat that is the reason there are video game ratings you know, it's Temple of Doom was one of the movies that created the PG-13 rating, and so yeah, this is a video game that created a rating systems on video game, movie is so tame compared.
Yeah. Yeah, because Mortal Kombat is always, like, very bloody. Even this morning I was watching the trailer for Mortal Kombat 11, and it's one of the most violent video game trailers I've ever seen in my life, with, like, knives going through skulls
crazy effects now.
Yeah, is that the one that's the blood on the carpet one, or is that for a different Mortal Kombat? There's one that it was a band commercial called Blood on the Carpet, and it's someone in a boardroom. That, you know, he ends up having to finish someone, and he rips the guy's heart out.
Oh, jeez.
And this was a commercial. Yeah. Like, you know, a regular, it's supposed to be aired on TV commercial.
Oh, I haven't seen that.
And it was banned. Yeah, oh yeah, Google that shit.
I remember watching the movie as a kid and being disappointed that Scorpion got killed just because he was my favorite.
Scorpion was probably my top used guy.
I didn't like the way he died either. Yeah. I think they sliced his skull, right?
Yeah.
And then there was, like, blood, like, spurting.
But it's like this weird fluorescent orange, yeah.
I mean, spoilers, you haven't seen Annihilation, but he comes back, he's okay. So.
Oh, okay. Well, see, but I also read something that Sub-Zero doesn't come back, though.
Yes, he does.
Well, there's two Sub-Zeros. Like, Sub-Zero dies in Mortal Kombat, and then his brother, the second Sub-Zero, which is also part of the game, comes... into Annihilation.
Fuck. Am I going to have to watch Annihilation?
Yes,
too?
But it's worth it. Every moment.
For sure.
So our next fight we get is Liu Kang versus Princess Katana on the beach with no fatalities. I guess the decisions for which battles are actually fatalities or not, it's just kind of arbitrary and selective. You know, Shang Tsung just decides... I don't want to kill Katana right now. I'm not going to yell out to finish him on this one. Or is this one not part of the tournament either?
Well, this one is definitely being watched, at least.
Yeah.
Exactly, yeah.
It seems like an exhibition match, not really.
It's just sparring? Right. Yeah. Okay. And Katana ends up giving Liu Kang advice about what to do in his next battle. And then we get Liu Kang versus Sub-Zero, where Sub-Zero ends up being killed with an icicle thanks to the tip about water. Thanks, Katana. Thumbs up.
Yeah.
The element that brings life, just like the Wicked Witch of the West. She's brought down by a wooden pail of water, just like the Wicked Witch of the West.
But it's so funny, though, because to Colin's point earlier, for him to conjure that ice literally took 3 minutes.
Yeah. Right? He spends 3 minutes just making this orb. Like, was his goal to just expand the orb to encompass Liu Kang and freeze him? Or like...
Until it's the size of the giant ball in Raiders of the Lost Ark. He's just going to crush him with it.
It seems like Sub-Zero just assumes that every single person is going to attack him and he's going to be able to freeze them in midair.
Yeah. So I've got another note. Is this part of the tournament? Because once again, we're kind of in this room where there's no one else supervising the fight.
Yeah.
Yeah,
is this the one Shang Tsung shows up at the end and says like flawless victory or whatever? Or no, not this one.
No, but it's so funny though because like, how do they determine who wins? Does someone come by later and see whose body is on the ground and be like, oh, 1 point for Liu Kang?
Well, or it's whoever shows up at the final battle. Yeah, it's exactly. Like, well, I guess everyone else is dead.
Where's the bracket?
Yeah, exactly.
No, this is the fight though where Kitana like she manages to sneak a peek from like the sidelines and be like, okay, yeah, bitch got my hint. He understood. What
my
I was saying,
subtle hint.
My subtle hint about the element that brings life,
and I think she drops the buckets of water in the fight. Yeah, so she pretty much cheated.
Oh yeah, she brings them earlier.
Yeah,
and then they come and they fight.
Yeah,
So this is the point of the movie now, where Goro is unleashed upon the tournament, and we get the Goro killing montage.
Oh yeah,
So this. This part of the movie, this is where all our black and Asian characters are in the movie.
Yep.
They're just being tossed aside by Goro and killed. But, you know, we're finally getting representation, even if it's like 3 seconds at a time during this montage of them dying in the gravel. Yeah. And then we get our one black person that we met earlier, which is Art. And so I guess he's one of our feature black characters, and Goro just, you know, straight up kills Art with his big overhead punch. And in this scene we get two finish hymns and a flawless victory.
That's
so
right.
we're amping up.
I just
want
to point out, it wasn't flawless.
It was definitely not flawless.
Like, none of the flawless victories that get called are flawless.
No.
Yeah. And Shang Tsung takes another soul. And then we get another Raiden pep talk about Goro being unbeatable, and he starts pointing out everyone's weaknesses to them. You know, I like the dramatic where he, you know, like he points out Sonya's weakness, he points out Johnny's weakness, and then he starts walking away, and Liu Kang's like, what about me? Just so that we can have the dramatic build up to the fact that... What was it? Liu Kang was too...
He won't accept his destiny.
He won't accept his destiny, yeah. This is where we've got... I wrote a note that says, Sonya is a disappointingly weak character. She's walked all over by Johnny Cage, right? Because this is where we get Liu Kang meditating on the beach about what he's got to do.
Yep.
We've got Sonya and Johnny Cage arguing, and Johnny Cage decides, no, he's got to man up. He's got to man up, and he's got to challenge the forearm guy. And all we get from Sonya is she just crosses her arms in a huff and says, oh, don't you do this to protect me, Johnny Cage. Like, come on, like 1995, like let's write a strong female characters. They exist.
Yeah.
Even before this time, we had Lieutenant Ripley in Aliens. We had
and the funniest thing
we
about
had
it
Terminator,
is,
Sarah Connor. Like,
is there strong characters in the game?
Yeah.
There was absolutely no reason why they needed to do this.
Yeah.
So
Johnny Cage decides to challenge Goro, and then we get our fan service because Johnny Cage has his sunglasses here, but Goro takes them off and crushes them. It's just, I have, what the fuck? Like, why does he have to take off the glasses and crush them? But we get the patented Johnny Cage goes into the splits and gives a shot to the nuts.
Classic.
It's nice to see it in film form. And then we get another finish him. Johnny Cage ends up, or Goro ends up following Johnny Cage up to the edge of a lift.
What are the rules of this tournament? Like, they're in an arena, and then they just starts running outside the arena, and Goro's chasing him.
Exactly, yeah. Climbing up the walls, and, you know, like...
He gets the high ground.
He gets the high ground. he just Obi-Wan Kenobi'd him. but, yeah, he ends up throwing Goro off a cliff, and we get the callback to "This is where you fall down" before he steps on Goro's fingers, and Goro just falls into oblivion. Okay, spoil me. Does Goro come back in Annihilation?
Definitely not. Okay, but there is an iconic line. Those are $500 sunglasses that he says, and that has carried through the lore of every single Mortal Kombat game since then.
There's that, and there's also the. To go back when he fights Scorpion, after he kills Scorpion, he has the autograph.
Oh, that's right.
That photo is also part of his fatality.
Oh, right. I remember that one. And so now this is where Sonya literally becomes a damsel in distress. Like,
this movie is kind of like the slow descent of Sonya, if you look at it one way.
There's like a graph.
She starts off so strong. And by the end of it, she's just in chains.
She gets taken to a castle in a realm where Raiden can't follow, but she'll be forced to accept the battle challenge from Shang Tsung. And then we see the really poor CGI gremlin thing again, because Liu Kang and Johnny Cage have gone after Sonya to rescue her, and they're walking through the crumbling... village, or
that's like it's not Outworld, but it's the Katana's home realm,
Edenia.
So Liu Kang has heard the gremlin, the reptile, walking around, and he ends up wrestling it into a statue, and it becomes full-fledged reptile, who is played by Keith Cook, also in Mortal Kombat Annihilation. National Security. He was also in Beverly Hills Ninja, but nothing since 2012, again. And Reptile is voiced by Frank Welker.
Yeah. Voiced?
Yeah. If you don't...
He squeals.
Yeah, he squeals. Oh, okay. And if you don't know who Frank Welker is, he was Optimus Prime. He was Freddy from Scooby-Doo. Very famous voice actor. So I guess because he's green and I know my color wheel, this means that Reptile is Scorpion plus Sub-Zero. Do I have my color math right? Scorpion
color
plus Sub-Zero
equals
Reptile.
but there's also the thing that happens when the gremlin gets thrown into the body. A voiceover says Reptile.
Yeah.
And then the techno music
starts.
Yeah.
And I love Reptile just gets up and just books it and just
And this really kind of starts the theme. What you have to watch Annihilation, because everyone travels by tumbling. Yeah. They just tumble everywhere.
Liu Kang ends up kicking Reptile's ass, and Reptile just becomes a big pile of bugs.
Yeah, that was weird.
Well, he's in there. I never understood what the thing was with the insects.
But that made no sense.
So Katana shows up at this point to give a little bit more exposition about what could happen to Earth if they don't succeed. And now we've got the time to reveal the tower that they're headed to, which, my God, this was some terrible CGI. Oh. I was giving the movie as many props on CGI. When we did Last Starfighter, I went really hard on the CGI because it was first generation CGI. So I'm trying to give credit where credit's due, but my God, when they do like an overall establishing shot of some sort of location, the CGI is terrible.
Yeah.
Like, this is something where they could have used matte paintings and probably gotten better
results.
Little
models.
Exactly. So I would think that the CGI is more expensive too than doing like miniatures.
They could have used Lego and it would have looked better than what they had.
And so this is where we get our damsel Sonya again. We find her and she's now been given like a very sexualized outfit and her just been fucked hairdo.
This is pulled straight out of Mortal Kombat 2.
In Mortal Kombat 2, she's tied up in Shao Kahn's arena. But she doesn't have. She's literally wearing like a torn up paper bag or like a burlap sack.
Yeah, it's similar. What in the game? She's wearing a burlap.
No, in the movie.
She was wearing that black corset thing with the mini skirt, like a leather black corset with a mini skirt. It looked almost like a gladiator outfit, but it was a very sexualized outfit. We get the line from Sonya. She's refusing to fight, and she says, "My friends will come." And Johnny Cage says, "They're already here. They're disguised as the monks."
I love it.
I love movies or books or anything like that where we have the conveniently placed villains. Harry Potter is something that's famous for it. You know, When Harry Potter is fighting Bellatrix Lestrange and she says, scream for your boss. He can't hear you from here. And Voldemort comes in, "Can't I, Potter?" so this is one of those, moments. This is the "Can't I, Potter" moment where my friends will come. They're already here. And then the so-called rules of who can challenge and who has to accept the challenge and what the consequences are, they just keep changing because Sonya has refused, which means that technically she should have lost Earthrealm because she didn't accept the challenge,
it's final combat now. So if Shang Tsung challenges her, she has to accept the fight for it to be a fight that matters.
Yeah, and they were hoping, Shang Tsung was hoping that she didn't know that and would accept the fight.
Refused. Okay, so he was trying to get her on some technicality.
Because she doesn't know how to fight.
Yes, because he knew he should.
This is bad guy entrapment. That's why he wanted Sonya there. Yeah, maybe I'm approaching David's theory that he alluded to earlier. Okay, I still can't wait to hear your theory. I'm looking forward to that. Because I was thinking if Sonya refuses, that means that Earth forfeits, but Kitana says that this is deceitful, so Shang Tsung challenges Johnny Cage, but Liu Kang steps in and says, "No, you'll challenge me." Like, it's just like, it's all these convoluted rules.
Shang Tsung is trying to avoid Liu Kang because Liu Kang is a descendant of Kung Lao, and Kung Lao is like the last person to defeat Outworld at Mortal Kombat.
Oh, okay.
Exactly. And it's his destiny to save Earth. Okay. So he knows it's going to happen.
Yeah.
So we get another techno fight, and this time it's between Liu Kang and Shang Tsung. It seems unfair that he's allowed to summon the souls of the fallen warriors. I mean, I thought it was bad enough that Kano brought a knife into the... But this guy, I mean, he's just been given 8 backup guys.
Yeah.
But Liu Kang dispatches them easily because I guess souls of fallen warriors are shitty at fighting. And then Shang Tsung ends up doing his extra dirty manipulation trick where he morphs into Liu Kang's brother, Chan. But Liu Kang isn't too blinded by this and ends up power punching him off the balcony onto the spikes. It would appear Shang Tsung doesn't bleed. He's got
he's made
all
of souls.
Yeah.
So Shang Tsung doesn't bleed. Like,
well, he bleeds in the game.
Well, exactly. Yeah. So he's now impaled on like 5 different spikes, and there's like no blood whatsoever.
Yeah. That is such fan service, though. I mean, that's the pit fatality from all the games.
It's like one of the my favorite parts of Mortal Kombat is uppercutting people
into the pit.
And so we get Liu Kang saying flawless victory this time. Oh, yeah, brought it back. Thanks,
Nobody seems to understand what flawless victory means.
Exactly. I was like, you got hit so many times. It's not like if you just get tapped, it still counts.
So it's the definition of flawless to all these people. I'm not dead?
Yeah, exactly.
Flawless is like 70%.
Yeah. So all the souls that Shang Tsung has ever sucked out of people are now set free, and we get to say goodbye to Chan. And then we're at the very end, and Raiden has, they've met back up with Raiden. Everybody is celebrating that Earth is still okay for now. Raiden is just all buddy buddies with everybody, and I had no doubt that you guys had it in you. And then we get the Emperor shows up at the very end to set up a sequel. The Emperor is really cheesy CGI too, but also voiced by Frank Welker.
Yeah.
So yeah, Frank Welker has two voice credits in this movie.
Yet another reason why you have to watch Annihilation, because I love sequels that are just like direct. Like it,
oh, does it pick up immediately? It
exactly where. Yeah. But the thing is, they swapped out actors.
They've recast it.
Yeah, because Sonya's different, right?
Yeah, they recasted half the cast. Yeah. So, and they're wearing different costumes for some reason.
Well, they didn't go back and look for like
references.
Yeah, because I mentioned that, you know, people like Reptile are in the second one. So is he playing Reptile, or is he just decided to put on a different mask?
I don't think Reptile is in Annihilation, but they have Rain and Ermac, which are
so they just took him and put him in a different mask.
Yeah.
Okay.
Oh, they're different colors. Yeah. They're.
Yeah. Okay. And then we cue more techno, and we are at the end of Mortal Kombat.
What a journey.
That is Mortal Kombat. Now, Colin, David, on IMDb, it scored a 5.8 out of 10. That's 98,449 reviews, gave it 5.8. The Metascore, the critic score, is 58.
Wow, that's so accurate.
Yeah. On Rotten Tomatoes, it has 47% on the tomato meter, so the critics on Rotten Tomatoes didn't like it as much. But the audience rating of 57%, like, everything is just floating around 57-58%.
Mm-hmm.
So that's what these people have rated it at. Colin, before we get to what we think about it, What do other people have to say about it?
All right, let's go to Critics Corner. So, Critics Corner is where we kind of take a look at what some of the critics of the time had to say about the movie when it came out. So, the first one I have is from John Ferguson, who says, "Unlike other games-inspired turkeys," in brackets, he has Super Mario Bros. Street Fighter.
God.
"This one actually works. Thanks mainly to director Paul Anderson's single-minded dedication to non-stop, expertly choreographed martial arts action, all set to a thumping techno beat." David Hogan says, "Bad actors and lead roles, sometimes poor fight choreography and extremely dated special effects. MK isn't a good film, but it does make for a good laugh with friends."
I wonder how many of those, though, when it talks about the fight choreography, I wonder how many of those are talking about Sonya.
Oh.
like, expertly crafted fight choreography? Like, we decided that Sonya's is, like, messy at best.
This last one was one of my favorites from a user named Eric D. Snyder. He said, "If the movie Mortal Kombat were a character in a Mortal Kombat video game, its special maneuver would be to climb on its opponent's shoulders and defecate on his head." Oh, I have one more. From Widget Walls, it says, "Cheesy with no nutrients, but hey, anything's better than Street Fighter."
True words.
Right on. Okay, so that's what critics have had to say about. We've got, 5.8 is kind of where everyone is sitting. What how is it for you guys? Like seriously, like I know you guys are, you know, you guys have such a love
pretty
for
biased.
This. Yeah, you guys,
there's no
now you know how I feel every week, right?
There's definitely the nostalgia factor, the fact that I love the game. I would give it an 8.5.
Yeah. 8.5. Okay, so you're going to flip those numbers around. Yeah. Colin, where
Yeah, I was going to say, even I watched this movie twice and I loved it both times, and I don't know, like, for the love that I have for the franchise and the fact that these movies still entertain me, even Annihilation, even though some people think it's crap, but I still think it's good. I would give Mortal Kombat minimum an 80%.
Minimum 80%. Wow. Okay. Well, I have to be a little realistic. I have to be the party pooper here. I had fun. I will admit that I had fun. The storyline is not a very good storyline, but the fight scenes were fun, and Johnny Cage did have some really good lines. I don't know what 16-year-old me would have been thinking if he said he loved this movie. I don't think I loved it. I liked it. You guys are up around 80. I have to float around the 50% mark. I gotta go down where everyone else is with the 5.8. I can get behind a 5.8 rating
rounded
for this
movie.
Rounded up to
60.
Rounded up to 60. I'll give it 60 at most, but because I did have fun.
Yeah.
I will admit that I had fun, as terrible as some of the plot points were. And I just, I guess there's a part of me, like with my 2020 brain, that is furious about what they did with Sonya.
Yeah.
You know,
with so many of the characters, as far as representation goes, I mean, people of color were relegated to like corpses.
Yeah, exactly. You know, so. Yeah, exactly. And the movie itself is pretty groundbreaking in all those respects, because there is a lot more representation in the game than there was in the movie.
Like, yeah, absolutely.
They whitewashed the movie. And so, like you said, you know, is the 2021 Mortal Kombat going to be... It's Justin Lin doing that one, isn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah?
I think so.
The Aquaman? Fast and Furious guy? Yeah.
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 Yeah, so... He does some
of the cast. I don't know who's
it's. Yeah, him. it's very multicultural.
Yeah.
Super diverse and probably more true to the original concepts. So. Yeah.
Right on. Okay, well, that's Mortal Kombat, and that's our show for this week.
Wait, we need to. David's theory?
Oh yeah, sorry. Sorry.
Oh no. It's it's pretty well. You guys pretty well wrapped it up. I think from the very beginning he needed somebody weak in order to get to that final combat. But I just don't know why he didn't pick just a random person off the street. Yeah. Like, why did he even go for special forces? But I just want to tell one quick story.
Oh, sure.
This movie, I was just so in love with this movie as a 9-year-old. I started a Mortal Kombat club in my school where I got my friends to fight each other for the rights to play on the soccer field at the next recess.
Nice.
And this went on for months.
I remember... It's funny, so I remember watching this movie and trying, like, I love the ninjas, I love Scorpion, Sub-Zero, all those guys. So I would take, like, sheets, we had blue and yellow sheets, and I would try to figure out how I could, like, wrap it around my body, and I'd have, like, I was gonna bring one and wear it, but now that we all have to wear masks, like, make a makeshift Sub-Zero mask.
It's not as much fun when it's a daily occurrence,
it's not
quarantine.
It won't be as much fun for everybody out there, because they can't see it, they can only hear it, but... Yeah,
the pandemic world where looking like Scorpion every day is
it's just normal.
I remember wanting to play Mortal Kombat, but it's not really something your parents are gonna let you like play with your friends in real life.
Right on. Oh, and David, if someone wants to challenge you at Mortal Kombat,
yeah, like... send me. I play it on PlayStation, Xbox, PC, and Switch, and all of my gamer tags right now are J.B. Fletcher. So J-A-Y-B Fletcher.
Okay, tell everyone why J.B. Fletcher.
So
I love this story.
I'm a huge fan of Murder, She Wrote. Jessica Fletcher is one of my heroes. And every time somebody trolls me and I beat them, I send them a message that says, "And that's all she wrote."
Outstanding. Well, that's Mortal Kombat, and that's our show for this week. If you like that show, one thing you can do to really help us out on the business end is go to Apple or Spotify or Stitcher or whatever app you listen to your podcasts on and give us 5 stars. Doesn't really matter what you say. You could put "finish him" or "fatality" in there. I don't care, but it's those 5 stars that drive us up the charts and help us get noticed.
And if you want to get in contact with us, you can reach us by email at iusedtolikethisone@gmail.com. You can find us on social media. We have a Facebook group. Just search "I Used to Like This One" on Instagram, Twitter, Snapchat now too, apparently. Any of the other ones I'm missing?
What's our LinkedIn? Do we have a LinkedIn?
No, we have
a TikTok. We'll be developing content for our TikTok. Maybe we can get David to send us some sweet finishers.
We're working on a website. Oh, yeah. I used to like this one.com. Right now it's just a placeholder website, but you can go there if you want.
There we go. So yeah, social media, our website's the place to go if you want to find out which movies we're watching so you can watch them before you listen to the podcast.
A big thank you to our special guest, David Sun. Thank you for joining us today on Mortal Kombat. I Used to Like This One is created by, hosted by, and produced by Sean Wells and Colin Stewart. It is edited by Sean Wells, music by Lyndon Carter. Look for his band Carter in the Capitals anywhere you listen to music. Thanks for listening, And join us next week when we take a look at another movie on I Used to Like This One.
That was so much fun.